Okay, good morning, everybody. This is Bio 231, Wednesday, April 23rd. You had an exam last time, and let's take a look at the schedule and see what we're going to talk about today. It's going to be heart. Where's heart, heart, heart? Oh, way down over here. Yeah, chapter 19. And we'll have one and a half lectures on that, then get into some blood vessels. And how many weeks are left? 4 weeks?
Yeah.
4 weeks left in the semester, so it's about 25%. Doesn't seem like a whole lot of time, but I just want to let you know that there was a big move to get anatomy in the summer session down to 5 weeks. So you guys, yeah, I know. So you guys, 4 weeks doesn't seem like a whole lot of time, but relatively compared to a 5 week class, it's a long time. Okay. I don't know how it's possible, but anyway, I did get it changed to 8 weeks in case you have any friends that want to take it. Dr. Sanchez will be teaching that class in the summertime. Okay, but it's still 8 weeks. That's still mighty fast. Your exams are in Blackboard. We didn't have time in lab today to look at the exams, and my guess that the lab this afternoon won't have time to look at them either. So see me during office hours and maybe next week. At least Monday labs, I'll be able to show your exams to Wednesday morning, yes, but not Wednesday afternoon, because Wednesday afternoon labs, they're going to do some filming in lab. And so I don't want to take time just sitting there shuffling papers. So that's that. Okay. Your next exam is going to be on May 21st. Exam number 4, and that's a Wednesday, and so the Wednesday labs will have a practicum on that day too. Oh, I don't have the screens on. There's always one more thing. Thank you. Let's see if that works. Okay, so that very last Wednesday, 21st of May, exam 4, and that will be lab practicum 4. The preceding Monday is when the Monday labs get their fourth practicum. All right, and it's the last test is going to be 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, and 25. So these are small chapters, so we'll be able to cover those without much problem. Let's see, do I have drop date? Oh, May 5th. I'm not sure that's the correct drop date. I think I made an error. All right, so I want to check that, and maybe next time I'll mention to you when the correct drop date is. Maybe it is a correct date. Maybe I have it wrong in the physiology class. All right, but it is coming up. It is in May sometime. Okay, anybody have any questions? Yeah, oh, on the 24th, no, that's, I think, that's a Saturday, so we don't have class. Yeah, and that's, I think, Memorial Day weekend even. So it's probably a holiday. It's probably even a holiday. I don't even know why they have semester ending. Okay. Okay, yeah, just put end. Oh, fall. Yeah, it's not fall semester, is it, anymore? Okay, never mind. Okay. All right, so we're going to talk about the heart. And the heart's a little bit different compared to the structures we've been looking at so far because, let's pull it up over here. So here is pretty much a picture, a nice picture of the heart right here. Most of the structures that we looked at so far in here, like for instance an ulna, you got one on your right side, and what does that mean in terms of the left side of your body? You've got one over there too, right? And you've got a right thumb, that means you also have a left thumb. We call that bilateral symmetry. So if you have a right eye, you got a left eye, right nostril, left nostril. So there's a lot of symmetry that we've looked at so far in this class, and that has made things kind of easy. There's actually just a couple things that there's only one of in your body, like pituitary gland, and that was just sitting right smack in the middle, right? And the heart is going to be a little bit of a departure from that really easy, beautiful symmetry that we've had so far in the class, because you have one heart, and the heart, unlike the pineal gland, is not smack right in the middle of your body. All right, I can't bend my wrist just right. Your heart really isn't like this. And you all know from just watching TV and movies, what side of the body is your heart mostly on? It's mostly on the left side, okay? So it starts out in the middle, and then it angles. There are two important angulations. What I want you to think about the heart, think of it as a triangle, like this. But it's going to be an upside-down triangle, upside-down pyramid. And what do we call the tip of a pyramid? This is the apex. All right, so that's going to be the apex of the heart. And what do we call the part of a pyramid that the pyramid is sitting on top of? That's the base, right? So here is the base. All right, so that is just some nomenclature that I'm going to talk about. And my hand sort of looks like that, right? Palm of my hand is broader than my fingertips. So your heart is not right smack in the middle. The base of the heart is, but as you go from base to apex, there's an angulation, right? It angles over to the left. And that's why more of the heart is on the left side of the body than the right. Right? So we don't have that perfect symmetry. There's another angle, too, that the heart has to go through. As you go from base to apex, not only does it angle over to the left, it angles out anteriorly like this. I don't know, could you see what I did? It's kind of subtle, but there are two angles, right? There's one to the left, and then there's one anterior. Or you could do what? You could go one anterior and then one to the left. So your heart is kind of just cradled inside the mediastinum. So on this figure, I see the apex, and what part of the heart is this up over here? Yeah, that's the base. That's the whitest part. Okay, so there is some asymmetry, and we see some asymmetry in these blood vessels that are attached to the heart as well. Okay. When we look at a heart, this is going to be a heart as you are viewing it on me. All right, so the side of the heart that's over here, which is where I have the cursor right now, all right, is going to be on this side of me. So what hand did I raise? Left, right? So that's the left side of the heart. And the right side is going to be over here. And indeed, the heart really does have two sides. Right? There's some symmetry. The sides are actually quite a bit different, but at least there are two sides that we're going to think about, a left side and a right side. And because of that angulation, that very tip of the heart, the apex of the heart, since it angles out, whenever your heart beats, it pounds up against your chest wall. And the heart beats very violently, actually. Right? It just doesn't go contract. It actually goes boom, boom, boom. And when it goes boom, 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 the apex of the heart actually pounds up against your thoracic wall. And you can palpate that. You can feel exactly where that point is. And that's called the point of maximal impulse. So if you really want to figure out where somebody's heart is, because our hearts are all in a little bit different position, okay, you can always feel for that point of maximal impulse in case you need to put ECG electrodes on in a special order or something like that. Or you're going to do some kind of imaging study and you want to know where the heart is ahead of time, so when you look, you're looking in the right spot. That point of maximal impulse, and we just call that PMI, right? PMI, point of maximal impulse, is where the apex of the heart is beating up and down on the chest wall. All right. The other thing that I notice is that there is a sulcus on the anterior side of the heart. And we're going to call this the anterior longitudinal sulcus. So those are really the only three important landmarks that you have to memorize. And of course, the first two are really easy. All right. So the first one I want you to memorize is, number one is apex. Number two is base. And then the last thing that I want you to memorize is this anterior longitudinal sulcus, number three. All right, so what side of the heart is the anterior, thinking too hard ahead of time, anterior, spell it for me, anterior longitudinal sulcus. So that's number three. So I'm going to be asking you that a lot, just to make sure that it's just ingrained in your mind. So what side of the heart is this that you're looking at? That's going to be the anterior side, right? And so if this is superior, if the base is superior, you know that, and the apex is inferior, this is anterior, then you're going to know exactly what is left and right, right, and all that. So that completely describes the heart in terms of orientation. Now, when you look at that anterior longitudinal sulcus, notice that it doesn't go straight from the base down to the apex. You see it kind of angles over to the right side. And if you were to turn the heart around, you'd see that it actually wraps around the heart a little bit. Kind of looks like a candy cane stripe. And on this figure, you notice that the sulcus is filled with something. What is that sulcus filled with? As a matter of fact, it's kind of hard to see the sulcus because it's got so much stuff there. What do you see? I see some blood vessels, and blood vessels on the heart are called coronary blood vessels. And something else it is all of this adipose tissue. Right, so just like we call fat around the eyeball periorbital fat, this is what we're going to call pericardial fat. Pericardial fat, just fat on the outside of the heart. And the heart muscle itself is going to be a nice dark color, maybe red, at least in all the illustrations it's red, and adipose is going to be yellow or white. So this is very good contrast, right? So you'll be able to find this anterior longitudinal sulcus even from across the room, like looking at a male and female pelvis. So this is a really important landmark. All of the other coronary blood vessels go straight perpendicular, right, down to the apex of the heart. None of them are angled. It is only this one right here that is angled, and so it's a perfect landmark for you to observe the heart very quickly and know what the anterior side is. Of course, you know this is inferior, superior, and then it would be easy to tell this is the left side and right side of the heart. So those are actually the three main things that you have to know in this chapter to understand the heart.
On the left side.
Left side is here.
No, but the anterior leg on the front, but on the left side, more on the left side.
Oh, this sulcus right here? More on the left? I wouldn't really say that necessarily because we can rotate the heart around a little bit. And this is just a nice straight anterior view. And the left ventricle, even though it doesn't look like it on this view, the left ventricle is much bigger than the right ventricle. And it's much stronger. And we're going to see why that is in a little bit. It just happens the way that it's angulated. Okay. Well, before we start talking about the heart, let's talk about some membranes that are around the heart. So the heart is in a cavity that's not open to the outside world. And there's a membrane then that lines the heart. What kind of membrane are you aware of that lines a cavity that's not open to the outside world? It's a serous membrane, yeah. So a visceral cavity has a lining called a serous membrane. And just to refresh our memory, what's a membrane that lines a cavity that's open to the outside world? Like oral cavity, nasal cavity, reproductive tract. That's a mucous membrane. Right? And mucous membranes are really simple. Serous membranes are a little bit more complicated because remember there's three different divisions to a serous membrane. Part of the membrane is right on the visceral organ, right? And so we're going to call that the visceral pericardium because you could say it's a visceral serous membrane, but since it's on the heart, we're going to say cardium. Anytime you hear myocardium, we're speaking specifically about the heart. So pericardium is the membrane right on, or the visceral pericardium is the membrane right on the surface of the heart. That's really thin, tissue paper thin. Be able to see that in lab next week. All right, and then you have a space. We call that pericardial, it's filled with pericardial fluid, pericardial space. And then also another membrane that is going to be lining the mediastinum cavity itself. And that's what we call the visceral pericardium. All right, so here are the three divisions of that serous pericardium. And let's take a nice view of this. Where is that at? It looks like it got moved to a different chapter. No, it's got to be here. All right, let me go back one slide. All right, so here we see just a picture of a cadaver and the heart, and you can see for sure it's angled to the left, right, and the base is more on midline. And what is the smallest cavity that the heart is in? For sure it's in the thoracic cavity, but let's think the smaller cavity. What's smaller than that? Okay. And I'm interested in the smallest cavity. The smallest cavity is going to be the... This is 18-2. Maybe 19-2. Okay, so first the pericardial cavity is the smallest cavity that the heart is in. And then the pericardial cavity is inside the mediastinum, which is a little bit bigger. And then the mediastinum is inside the thoracic cavity, right? So that we have cavities inside cavities. All right, so let's zoom in to maybe a region right here and take a look at some of these membranes. So here is the myocardium, and we're going to zoom in to this region right here. We would expect to see some membranes right on the surface of the heart, and we would call that the visceral pericardium. Let's take a look. So here is the wall of the heart, and in particular, this is a wall of an atrium. Here is a membrane right on the surface of the heart, and that is what we call the visceral pericardium because it's on that visceral organ. And then it wraps around when it gets to the pericardial sac, and here is the more superficial layer, right? And so we're going to call this the parietal of pericardium. And so we got visceral and parietal pericardium and a space between them, and what do we call that space? It's a serous space. You could call it a serous space, but it is just, in this particular case, it's the pericardial cavity, filled with a little bit of fluid, maybe about a half a centimeter's worth of fluid right in this area. All right. But since the heart is beating around very violently inside your chest, and since there are no bones holding it in place, there is an additional membrane. And this one has a lot more collagen in it, and it's called the fibrous pericardium. It's even more superficial to the parietal pericardium. And when we do a dissection, fetal pig dissection, you'll notice cutting through these different layers. All right, so another way to think of membranes on the heart is to use your knowledge on a bone. Could you tell me anything that you remember about membranes and bones? How many membranes did you learn about bones? There's a membrane on the outside of every bone called the periosteum. And the inside of a bone has a membrane around it too, and that's called the endosteum, right? Okay, so now we're going to use that same nomenclature to layer these membranes on the heart, on the outside and on the inside. So here we have the epicardium, right? And here is the endocardium. And the epicardium right here is really the visceral serous pericardium. It's exactly the same name, right? But the membrane on the outside, right, is called the epicardium, and the membrane on the inside is called the endocardium. And in between the epi and endocardium is the wall of the heart, the muscle wall of the heart. And of course, that has cardiac muscle tissue in it. Okay, so that's the membrane system. So there are different ways to think about it. Think about it in terms of these three layers right here, the fibrous pericardium, parietal, and the visceral pericardium. Or you could think about this heart wall right here, in which case we would call this the epicardium, right? The myocardium is the muscle, and the endocardium is the membrane on the inside. This inside membrane is pretty special, because if you were to palpate it or run your finger over it, take a guess. Do you think it would be smooth and slippery, or would it be rough, like sandpaper? Okay, it's going to be smooth and slippery because what's flowing and slipping over this surface right here is blood. And if blood ever runs into anything rough, then it's going to change from a liquid to a solid, right? It's going to coagulate. It's going to form a blood clot. So this lining right here is really important. To make sure that blood stays a nice liquid that flows through our body all over the place. And even blood vessels have this layer inside them as well. All right, so those are the layers of the heart. You got the fibrous, that's almost like the dura mater around the brain, and then the serous pericardium made up of the parietal, the pericardial space, and the visceral pericardium. So let's now look at some more features of the heart, okay? And that is, the heart has various chambers, has spaces in there. So the heart is basically a muscle. Blood has to flow into that muscle so that when the muscle contracts, right, it's going to be pushed out into some blood vessels. So the heart is a muscle. It just pressurizes blood. And the chambers inside the heart, the ones that are inferior are called ventricles. The ones that are superior are called atria. And first off, probably you should know, how many chambers does the heart have?
Four.
Yeah, we kind of went over this in lab just a little bit, right? Four chambers. Right, so like I said, the inferior two are ventricles, the superior two are the atria. And here we do see a right and left side of the heart. So here is the left ventricle, here is the left atrium. They work together to pump blood. And over here is the right atrium and right ventricle. They work to pump blood. So you see there are two ventricles. So if I ask, how many major circulations are there in the body? We see that the heart has two sides. Just kind of, that kind of infers how many circulations there are. How many circulations are there? Yeah, as a matter of fact, there are two. So the left side of the heart pumps blood through what we call the systemic circulation, and the right side of the heart pumps blood through the pulmonary circulation. And whenever you hear that word pulmonary, you should think of lungs. All right, so, and that circulation is much smaller, right? Because your lungs are in the thoracic cavity right next to the heart. So look at the wall thickness. Right, so what muscle do you think is stronger, a big thick one or a thin one? All right, a big thick one is going to produce a lot more force. So the right ventricle, can you tell that the free wall of the right ventricle is thinner than the free wall of the left ventricle? That should be pretty easy to see. That's going to be a nice check for you when you get into lab and look at a real heart. All right, and that's because the right ventricle only has to pump blood through the lungs. It doesn't have to work very hard because it's a very small, very short circulation. But the left side of the ventricle has to pump blood all the way up to the brain, okay, all the way down to your toes, and then back again, so its job is much harder, and so it's much stronger as a result of that. Okay. So you got four chambers. Now, the heart is pumping blood, and blood should never go backwards in your body. And maybe there's a couple of cases where it might go, what do we call going backwards? Did I talk about that ever? How about going forward? What do we call going forward? We call that antegrade. Going backward is retrograde. So there shouldn't be any retrograde blood flow in the heart because the job of the heart is to pump blood into arteries, right? And that blood shouldn't go back into the heart or go into different places of the heart. So the heart has some structures to prevent retrograde flow. Anybody know what some of those things might be? Those are what we call valves, right? And it's really important for the heart to have valves, and it's really important that the valves are functioning properly. And I want to use an example from maybe something you have experienced, and it doesn't really necessarily have to do with the heart directly, but have you ever been at a beach that had some sand dunes or went to some sand dunes, and you wanted to get to the top of the sand dune, so you took a step up, right, and you took a step up to get to the top, and as soon as you take a step up, what happens? You slide back down, right, because the sand doesn't really support your weight. But then you take another step up, and what happens? You slide back down. So every step you take, right, you can only take like a little small step. So it's a lot harder to walk up that sand dune because not only are you going forward, but you're also slipping back down, right? So has anybody ever done that? Anybody ever walked up a sand dune anywhere? Oh, somebody has in here. Nobody? Yeah, okay. So what's it like on your body? Is it easy or is it hard? I mean, it's hard to like walk upstairs, but what about at sand dunes compared to walking upstairs? It's harder than stairs. Yeah, just relatively. Harder than stairs. Yeah, because you're in shape. Okay. All right, so it's really hard to walk up a sand dune because you're going backwards some of the time. And if you were to do that all day long, you'd be really tired. Now, what about if you had to do that your whole life? What would happen? Well, you'd just die, right? It would just be too hard. Same thing for the heart. If the valves are misbehaving and blood is going backwards when it should be going forwards, the heart is eventually going to die as well, right? So these valves are very important. So how many chambers does the heart have?
Four.
How many valves does the heart have?
Four.
Yeah, it's four, okay? So that's something that you should just memorize. How many valves does the heart have?
Four,
right? So four chambers, four valves. That's pretty easy to remember. All right, so where do we find some of these valves? There are valves between the atria and the ventricles, right? So here is the right atrium, here's the right ventricle, and so we call this an atrioventricular valve, right? Atrioventricular, because we put those words together with an O, and here's an atrioventricular valve. Here is the one on the left side of the heart. This is the left atrioventricular valve. But they have names besides that. The one on the right side over here is what we call the tricuspid valve, because this right here is a flap. This is what flaps together with something on the other side that's been cut away to form a valve. We call that a cusp. And guess how many cusps make up this valve right here? It tells you in the name, right? Tricuspid. So there are three of these flaps. Right? So that's a tricuspid valve on the right side of the heart. And on the left side of the heart, here's another atrioventricular valve, but it only has two cusps. And so we don't want to call that a tricuspid. We want to call that a bicuspid valve. Right? So the bicuspid is on the left side. And somebody named it something else before. It was named bicuspid to match up with the one over here. People named it a mitral valve because it reminded somebody of a hat that certain people wear on certain times. It's a flat hat that you can pop open and stick it like on top of your head like that. It's called a mitre. Right? And so that's why this has got its name, the mitral valve. And you just got to be familiar with both those names because somebody might use both names in the same sentence. Right, and so you just have to be able to follow with what they're saying. All right, so those are two. And the other two are different. They probably look different to you. Right, and these are what we call semilunar valves. It has a cusp here and a cusp here, and a semilunar valve actually has three. There is another valve, semilunar valve, and there are three. I only see two on this illustration. I see two on this illustration as well. The others have been cut away. Now, these are not between an atrium and a ventricle, but they're between a ventricle and a great blood vessel coming off the base of the heart. And in particular, right, we said that the right ventricle pumps blood to the pulmonary circulation, which means goes to the lungs. This right here is what we call the pulmonary artery or pulmonary trunk because it's going to take blood to the
lungs.
To the lungs, right? That's how it got its name. So this is what we call the pulmonary semilunar valve because it's right at the root of the pulmonary artery. Left ventricle, remember we said, pumps blood through the systemic circulation. And the artery that takes blood to the systemic circulation is the aorta. And maybe you've heard of aorta before taking this class. All right, that takes blood everywhere else in your body, but not the lungs. So this valve at the root of the aorta is called the aortic semilunar valve. And you can see the structure is quite a bit different. Okay. All right. So I think what I want to show you right now is the overall scheme on how this heart fits into your circulatory system. So let me put this down over here and go to here. This is doesn't look like a really important slide, but it is crucial for your understanding of the heart and even of the circulatory system. All right, so how many colors do you see?
Two.
Yeah, I see two colors. All right, and how many sides does the heart have?
Two.
It's got two, right? Two ventricles, two atria. So there's a left side and a right side. Here's the left ventricle. We said that pumps blood through everywhere in your body, starting with the aorta. So this is what we call the systemic circulation because it takes blood everywhere in your body. All right, and then it feeds a capillary. And the capillary then, these all coalesce into another blood vessel that brings blood back to the heart, so this is what we call a vein. All right, so here is the systemic artery, here is the systemic vein, bringing blood back to the heart. You might notice the colors right here. All right, the artery is red and the vein is blue. That represents the chemicals or the chemical composition of blood. So if blood is red, that means that it is relatively high in oxygen. If it's blue colored, it means it's relatively low. So if it's low over here and high over here, what happened to that oxygen? It ended up in your body, right? So that's the job of, one of the important jobs of the systemic circulation, to bring oxygen but also nutrients, all right, to tissues and also to wash away harmful products. Okay, so that's the systemic circulation. Now, on this red blood vessel, I see a couple arrows. And with respect to the heart, which way are these arrows pointing? And it just so happens that there are red arrows. And that just represents that this is relatively high in oxygen. But here I see an arrow, here I see an arrow, over here I see an arrow. Which way are they pointing? So your two choices are toward the heart or away from the heart. They're pointing away from the heart, okay? And if you ever have a blood vessel and blood is going through that blood vessel away from the heart, like I see these arrows, that's what we call an artery. So by definition, an artery takes blood away from the heart, and that has nothing to do with the colors that we see right here. The colors only represent the chemical compounds that are inside the blood. All right, let's look at the right side of the heart. And we see that is blue, so we have some blue-colored blood over here. What does that represent? What does that signify for us? That it is relatively low in oxygen, right? Over here it's high in oxygen. It's relatively low in oxygen. Right ventricle pumps blood into this blood vessel, going to the lungs, and that's good because it's going to the lungs to pick up oxygen, right, so that it can turn red coming back. All right, so what kind of blood vessel is this because it's blue, which is different than this one over here, which we call an artery, which is red. So what do we want to call this one right here? Okay. I wanted to trick you so that you don't miss this on a test. Okay, the way that we tell artery and vein is by the direction of the arrows, but not the color. All right, so what direction are these arrows pointing? Toward the heart or away from the heart? Away from the heart. So guess what? This is an artery as well, because it's taking blood away from the heart. It's only colored blue because it doesn't have very much oxygen. All right, so here is what we call the pulmonary artery. Pulmonary artery takes blood away from the heart to the lungs, but that makes perfect sense because what happens in the lungs? The blood picks up oxygen once again, and it turns red, and then it returns to the heart. So here I see a red arrow. And what direction is this arrow pointing? To the heart or away from the heart? That's to the heart. And it really doesn't matter what color it is. If there's blood flowing to the heart, it does so via a vein. Right? So a vein always brings blood back to the heart. An artery always takes blood away from the heart. And these colors right here just represent the different kinds of chemical compounds in the blood, but doesn't represent arteries and veins. All right, so here is a blue vein, right? Arrows are pointing to the heart. We're familiar with this, right? So this makes perfect sense to us. So we're very familiar with the systemic circulation. We're typically not so familiar with the pulmonary circulation because it's deep. We never see it. All right, so in the pulmonary circulation, what can you tell me about arterial blood in the pulmonary circulation in terms of oxygen? It's going to be poor, right? But that's okay because it's going to the lungs to pick up oxygen. What about a pulmonary vein in terms of oxygen?
High.
It's going to be high or rich, which is the opposite compared to the systemic circulation. So these two circulations are complementary to each other. And indeed, that's why we have two sides of the heart. We have a left side and a right side. Left side pumps through the systemic circulation, the right through the pulmonary circulation. They work together. So the ventricles have to pump the same amount of blood. If they didn't, then blood is going to end up stuck someplace, right? And eventually it's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and then explode, right? Which is not going to be a good thing. So, and the right ventricle is a lot thinner because the pulmonary circulation is a lot shorter. So you see all four chambers, right? Here is the right atrium. Here is the, tell me which one this is. Right ventricle. What's this one over here?
Left ventricle.
And so here is the left atrium. So left atrium is receiving oxygen-rich blood that is coming back from the lungs. This diagram also shows you all four of the valves. So again, this is they're illustrated, but they're not labeled on this diagram. So let's go ahead and label these things. Here is a semilunar valve at the root of this blood vessel. We want to call that it's going to be the pulmonary semilunar valve. Pulmonary semilunar because it's right at the root of the pulmonary artery. Here is another one right here, and you can see all three cusps on this one. It's on the root of the aorta, so we're going to call this the aortic semilunar valve, right? All right, so those are the two semilunar. They're very similar. And then don't forget about the ones between the atria and ventricles. They're atrioventricular valves, but they also have names. The one on the right side is called the tricuspid. The one on the left is called the bicuspid. So how are you going to remember this? Well, there's a little funny saying, you should try before you buy. All right, so if you have a hard time just memorizing that, just think of that little saying. What? Try, when you look from, read from left to right, try, okay, and then bicuspid, if you don't have a heart to actually count the number of leaflets that you have. Okay. All right, so here is a separation between the ventricles. It's a wall. And there is a wall between the lateral ventricles and the third ventricle. Comes down from the corpus, so I'm talking about the brain, comes down from the corpus callosum to the fornix. Can anybody remember what that really delicate tissue is called? It's septum pellucidum, right? So a septum is just a partition or a separation between different chambers or ventricles. Here I see a couple of ventricles. So here is the interventricular septum. Interventricular septum, and indeed it's thick. It's really strong because it helps make up some of the wall of the left ventricle. There's even an interatrial septum, but we can't see on this illustration because it's behind these arteries right here. All right. So, and the other parts of the myocardium, these are just the free walls. Okay. So this is a really good diagram. Probably should look at this maybe every day so that it just gets burned into your memory. And then you can, you know what, it's probably an exam figure too. Might be worth some. It is an exam figure. Nice. All right, so the chamber separations are called septum. So there's interatrial and ventricular septa. All right, we talked about the valves, right? The atrioventricular, semilunar valves. Oh, we even talked about the transmural layers. All right, so that's another way of thinking of the membranes on the heart. What's the membrane right on the outside of the heart? And in terms of thinking about this, transmural just means across the wall of the heart, not including the fibrous pericardium, not including the parietal pericardium, but just including what's attached to the wall of the myocardium. What's the membrane right outside the heart? That is called the epicardium. Same thing as visceral pericardium, but we don't want to think in terms of serous membranes. I want you to think in terms of heart wall. So you've got the epicardium. The muscle itself is called the myocardium. That's a layer, and it's all contractile tissue, mostly muscle. Okay, and then another membrane that lines every interior crevice of the heart, and that's called the endocardium. Yeah, endocardium. All right, so those are the layers. Okay. Blood flow through the heart. Yeah, this is pretty important. All right, and so as a matter of fact, this is one of the pre-lecture reading assignments, and that is to trace a drop of blood as it moves through these two circulations. All right? And so maybe I'll keep this slide on the screen, but let's draw this out. Right? And you should be able to do this from memory as well, eventually. Probably not right now, but just in a little bit. How about in the back of the room? Which marker shows up better, this one or the blue one? Blue one maybe, huh? Doesn't matter. Okay. So let's take a drop of blood, and where should we start? Where should we put a drop of blood? You know, it's going to move around, and we're going to say it's a normal heart, so all the valves are working properly. Where should we put a drop of blood? Should we put it in the right ventricle, pulmonary vein, left ventricle, right atrium? You guys get to pick. Where should we start? And since it's a continuous circuit, it really doesn't matter where we start, right? Because it's just going to repeat itself over and over and over again. Okay. How about right here in the right atrium? Okay, let's just start with the right atrium. Okay. So we have blood in the right atrium. A little bright right there. All right, so right atrium. And what is the condition of blood in the right atrium? Is it high or low in oxygen?
Low.
So I'm going to put a down arrow and oxygen. Doesn't mean no oxygen, it just means low. There's some oxygen in it, but relatively low. All right, so from the right atrium, where does blood flow next? Okay. And we want to include everything, all valves and everything. So it's got to flow past an atrioventricular valve, because here's an atrium, it wants to get into a ventricle, and the atrioventricular valve on the right side is the bi. It's the tricuspid, right? Tri before you bi. So tricuspid, And let's just say atrioventricular valve. I'm going to abbreviate valve with O, I mean with a V. And what's the state of blood here? High or low? Relatively high or low?
Still.
So I'm just going to put like quotation marks here, meaning that hasn't changed. All right, now where does blood flow? As it flows past the tricuspid, atrioventricular valve. It flows into, it's going to be on its way to the pulmonary something, but it's got to get into a ventricle first. You see that ventricle up there? And which one is it? It's going to be the right. All right, and what about the state of blood in the right ventricle? It's still low. All right, I'll just put another down arrow here. Okay. Right ventricle is pretty strong. It's going to pump the blood, okay, to the lungs. But what does it have to do before it gets to the lungs? Where does it have to go? It's got to go through another valve, right? So it's got to go through a pulmonary semilunar valve. I like it. I'll abbreviate. And then, of course, it's still low in oxygen. Right, still low in oxygen. All right, so then the pulmonary semilunar valve, blood passes through there into a blood vessel. What blood vessel? It's going to the lungs, so it's a pulmonary artery. Pulmonary artery, and what's the state of the blood in this pulmonary artery? High or low in oxygen? I heard of some conflict. High or low? Okay. Even though it's an artery, it's going to be low in oxygen? Yes, because it's the pulmonary artery. All right, so still low in oxygen. Pulmonary artery goes to where? To the lungs. All right. And here is a special kind of blood vessel that we haven't talked much about, and I've really been wanting to talk about this because it's had really hard time talking about it. But in particular, we have a capillary. Lung capillary or lung capillaries. All right, and a capillary is the only kind of blood vessel that allows for material to move into the blood or material in the blood to move out. Things can't move one way or the other in a artery or a vein. Okay, a vein. Oh, I don't have any veins in here yet because they're too thick. Capillaries are thin. That allows for exchange. So what I want to put maybe in parentheses here with a capital E is what? Exchange takes place. Exchange takes place in what kind of blood vessel? A capillary. So what is exchanging? So we're going to have oxygen. Where does oxygen go? It goes in, right? So we're going to say it goes in. And one of the byproducts of our metabolism is carbon dioxide. All right, and we need to get rid of carbon dioxide. So guess what happens to carbon dioxide here in the lungs? It moves from the blood into the air spaces in our lungs, and we breathe it out. Right. So we're going to say O2 goes in, and CO2, carbon dioxide, goes out. All right, so something goes in, something goes out. What do we call that? Exchange. All right. Exchange takes place in a capillary. All right. And you see it nice on this diagram. Where are those pulmonary capillaries? You see them up over here. They're really, really small, really, really thin. Right. So you got probably millions of those in your lungs. All right. Now where does blood go? From a lung capillary. Since it's the lungs, I would guess pulmonary something. Okay, and it's going to take blood from the lungs to the heart. What do we call a blood vessel that brings blood to the heart? A vein, right? So here is a pulmonary vein. And what's the state of blood here? High or low in oxygen? Yeah, it's going to be different than the pulmonary artery. So now it is high in oxygen because oxygen went in. And a vein takes blood to the heart, right? So let's continue on over here. All right, so on the diagram, what color is this pulmonary vein? Is it blue or red? It's red, because that just means high in oxygen. All right, it's still a vein because it's coming back to the heart. and it is the pulmonary vein. What chamber receives that blood from the lungs?
Left.
It's going to be the left side of the heart, and the top chamber is the left atrium. Left atrium, high in oxygen. And then left atrium is going to pump blood past something, another atrioventricular valve, but it is the bicuspid. Okay, where do we see that here? Atrium, tricuspid. Atrium, bicuspid. So it's atrioventricular valves that matches up, right? Oh, atrioventricular valve. All right, so after an atrium, it's got to be an atrioventricular valve. And what's the state of blood here? It's got to be same because there's no capillary, right? So it is high in oxygen. Okay, and an atrioventricular valve is between an atrium and a ventricle. And in this particular case, it's going to be the left ventricle. All right, and of course, that's going to be high in oxygen. Left ventricle is going to pump blood into an artery, but before it gets in an artery, where does it have to pass?
Aortic
semilunar valve. And of course, it's high in O2 there. And once it passes through the aortic semilunar valve, where does it end up?
Aorta.
And the aorta is taking blood away from the heart. So is that a vein? Should I put vein here or artery?
Artery.
Artery, taking blood away from the heart. No one ever calls it an artery. No one ever says aortic artery because aorta just means artery. Right? Everybody knows. There's no aorta vein. Right. Okay, and of course that's going to be high in oxygen. And where's the aorta going to take blood? We had pulmonary artery. It's going to take it to capillaries. And what kind of capillaries? Yeah, systemic capillaries. All right, but that's a special kind of blood vessel. Because why?
Exchange
takes place. So here in the systemic capillaries, what happens to oxygen?
Exchange.
In terms of oxygen goes out. You sure you want to lose oxygen? Goes out? Well, but it's going to your body, so that's a good thing. Okay, so oxygen goes out of the blood to your body, and your body is producing CO2, so CO2 goes into blood. And that process is what do we call that? I'm running out of marker. That is exchange. What kind of blood vessel? You said it before I could even think about how to ask the question. What kind of blood vessel allows for exchange?
Capillaries.
What about arteries?
Bring blood away.
Yeah, but what about in terms of exchange? Arteries and exchange?
No, never.
What about veins?
No, never.
So when I say what kind of blood vessel allows for exchange, you should say capillary only. Yeah, exclusively capillary. Okay. All right, so systemic capillaries. Now, blood can't stop there. Where does it go? Back to the heart. What kind of blood vessel brings blood back to the heart? A vein. And that's going to be a systemic vein. And, of course, that's going to be what? Low in oxygen, relatively low. Systemic vein takes blood back to the heart. What chamber in the heart?
Right.
Dang. We're done already. Systemic, how do we want to do this? Comes back over here, back to the right atrium. And is that low in oxygen? Yeah, low in oxygen right there. All right, so that's the whole circulation. So how many are there? There's two, pulmonary and systemic. How many valves? Four. How many chambers? Four. How many sides does the heart have? It's got two. All right, so that's a pretty good orientation for knowing something about the cardiovascular system. Plus, you also know the correct definitions for artery, vein, and capillary. Right? They all have different functions. Arteries take blood away from the heart, like the aorta, right here. Very high pressure. got to be really strong. All right? Blood coming back to the heart through a vein. There's a vein on here someplace.
Here.
Ah, all right. Low pressure, so that blood vessel doesn't have to be as thick and strong as an artery, but it's still too thick to allow for exchange. And the third kind is capillary. It's really thin. And some capillaries are very leaky, which then promotes exchange. It enhances exchange in certain organs in our body. Yeah.
Question. So when we talk about a somatic sinus, we talk about the exchange between the synthetic, or we talk about the sympathetic veins?
Systemic veins?
No, when we talk about sympathetic sinus, the
circuit. Circuit? Yeah, okay, circuit. What about a circuit?
When we talk about a circuit, and we talk about the exchange.
Exchange in a circuit, yeah.
Is it we talk about the exchange between the system, or we talk about the...
Oh, where is the exchange taking place?
No.
Okay.
When we talk about a synthetic circuit, right? That's what circuit.
Okay, the systemic circuit.
So it means we talk about sympathetic in capillary and sympathetic in the vein, right?
Yeah, the systemic circulation has a systemic artery, a systemic capillary, and a systemic vein. The pulmonary circulation has a pulmonary artery, a pulmonary capillary, and a pulmonary vein. Okay, so there's a lot of nice symmetry there, but what is interesting about these two circulations in terms of oxygen, they are what? They're not the same, they're the opposite of each other. I mean, they have all the same kind of blood vessels, but they're opposite each other. And the same thing for pressure. High pressure in the systemic circulation, low pressure in the pulmonary circulation. Now, I'll call it by its correct name. Maybe in the book it might say, maybe there might be some online questions that say right or left, but I'll use their proper name, like tricuspid, bicuspid, maybe mitral.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Better.
Yeah. Clinically, we usually don't say right or left atrial ventricular valve. No, it's only when you're learning where they belong. And where do they belong? Mm-hmm. Right between the atria and ventricle. So if you, for right now, if you memorize it that way, that's nice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so even though this is just looks like a really simple introductory slide, right, it's got almost everything that you have to know in this particular chapter. Right, so make sure you can draw this out, practice this a couple times today, a couple times tomorrow, and that will be really nice. Okay, let's look inside the heart. I do want to look inside the heart because we have some structures inside the heart that we want to look at, and a good view inside the heart is this one right here. This is an exam figure, and as a matter of fact, this is going to be a quiz next week.
Mm-hmm.
All right, going to be labeled this. You don't have to draw this, but if you can draw it, that would even be better. All right, so we know a lot, because this part of the heart down here is the pointy end is the apex. This point is up over here is the base. All right, and this would be like looking right at my heart. So this is the left side, here's the right side. Left side, you know now, pumps blood through the systemic circulation, starting with the aorta. Aorta is an artery, so you know blood is flowing away from the heart. Okay, through the So here is part of the ascending aorta. Here is the arch of the aorta. Right, and then it's going to go down over this way. That's what we call the descending aorta. So there are different parts of the aorta. All of them take blood away from the heart. All right, so if we look inside the ventricle, we see some things that look like fingertips. We call these papillae, and you've run into these structures before, like on the surface of your tongue, there are papillae, right? Dermal papillae, the little projections of the dermis up into the epidermis. So here are some muscles, but they're not microscopic. You can actually see these very nice. So we call these papillary muscles. I see some other muscles, right? I see some, like a lattice work of muscles, and they're not papillary muscles. They're a lot shorter. They're a lot thinner. We call these trabeculae carnae. It's labeled on this slide someplace. You see it over here someplace. Ah, trabeculae carni. So, do you have trabeculae carni in the right ventricle and left ventricle? Indeed you do. What about atria?
No.
You don't? It's nice and smooth. I don't see trabeculae. I see something over here, right? But these are not as extensive as the trabeculae and the ventricles, so we just call these things pectinate muscles. Pectinate muscles are in the atria, primarily in the right atrium, but we can find them in the left atrium. All of the trabeculae are going to be in the ventricles, as well as papillary muscles in the ventricles. The papillary muscles are also different than trabeculae because they have something associated with it. You see that it has another structure right on the tip of a papillae. We have some tendons, right? And we call these chordae tendini. They look like little heart strings. They're pretty tough. And they attach themselves right to the edge. Remember in anatomy, we call an edge a margin, right on the margin of the atrioventricular valves. So when the heart pumps blood from this left ventricle, okay, do you want blood going back up into the left atrium, or do you want blood going into the aorta? You want blood in the aorta. You don't want it going back into the atrium. And the way these flaps work, when the blood gets pressurized, it pushes these flaps together like this. And they're just connective tissue. There's no muscles that's holding them together. So if they were left alone just like that, when the ventricles contracted, then they would just flop up like this and blood would be squirting into the atrium. And when blood moves into the atrium, they would flop like this. They wouldn't be a valve. They'd just be floppers back and forth. But because the margins of these atrioventricular valves have chordae tendini, which attach to papillary muscles, right, they can only go back so far, and then they touch each other, they occlude each other, and that forms a nice seal between the atrium ventricles, right? So they open and close like that. And when they close, they actually slam close pretty hard, and it produces a heart sound. Maybe you've even listened to some heart sounds. You don't even need a stethoscope necessarily to hear a heart sound. When a valve opens, if it's a nice healthy valve, shouldn't make much of a sound at all. If it's not healthy, it will make a noise, right? If sometimes valves don't open up all the way, and it will sound like air leaving a balloon, will make a squeaking sound, right? And that's not good either, right? That's maybe not quite as bad as a leaky valve, but a stenotic valve certainly is not good either. All right, so papillary muscle, you know it's a papillary because it has chordae tendini on it. What else about this particular? So you got the layers, right? The myocardium, the epicardium. Another name for epicardium is visceral pericardium because it's right on the surface of the heart. And then the endocardium lines all of these spaces. The wall between the ventricles is called the ventricular septum. And probably you should say that because there's also what? An atrial septum as well between the atria. All right, there is no septum between the atrium and ventricles because we have that passageway. We have a valve, right? So, and there really shouldn't, there usually are not passageways across a septum. In a fetus there are, but in an adult there are not. We're going to look at that probably in lab. So this should be a nice separation. So blood in the left atrium and the left ventricle never goes into the right ventricle. But if there was a hole in the ventricular septum, which way do you think blood would flow? Okay, how does any kind of fluid flow? It could be a gas, or it could be liquid. It goes from high pressure to low pressure. All right, and which of these ventricles is high pressure compared to the other? Or do you think they're the same?
No.
They're not the same, you're right. The left ventricle is much higher pressure. Right? So when the heart contracts, both ventricles contract together. The left ventricle then squirts blood into the right ventricle. Right? And of course, you know that's not healthy because that's like going backwards in the heart. Right? So it always squirts in that direction because the left ventricle is always so much stronger. Okay, so you got the aorta, which is an artery. Here's the pulmonary artery. But before it turns into the pulmonary artery, we call this the pulmonary trunk, because I see that it splits. That splitting is what we call a bifurcation. And it bifurcates because you have a lung on the right and you got a lung on the left, right? And so those things after the pulmonary trunk, we officially call these arteries, even though it's blue. Is that okay that I call this an artery, even though it's blue? Anybody have a concern with that? You should not have a concern with that, right? Okay. The right pulmonary artery, look, gets tucked underneath the arch of the aorta. So you might see that in lab when we do our real dissection. Sometimes these arteries are cut off way too soon. So here are some blood vessels that bring blood back to the heart. So these have to be veins. The veins that bring blood back to the left atria are what we call the pulmonary veins, right? Because they're coming back from the lungs. There are two left pulmonary veins. There are two right pulmonary veins. You can't see the orifice or the opening for the right pulmonary veins because they're behind the pulmonary trunk right here. But there's going to be two here and then two over here. And here is the right atrium. We see some vessels connected to that. And these vessels bring blood back to the heart. So indeed, these are veins as well. Now, what about the size of this vein compared to this one over here? A lot bigger, okay? And that's how this thing got its name. It's called a vena cava, just means what? Big, huge, cavernous vein. That's its name. And of course, well, I see two of them, and they have this arrangement all the time. There's one on top of the other, so the one on top is called the superior vena cava, and the one on the bottom is the inferior vena cava. Okay. All right, so that pretty much labels all of these things, except in the exam figure for this particular chapter, I do want you to know what these things are called right here. These are branches coming off the arch of the aorta. And so probably label these, probably even in your textbook. I don't know why it wasn't labeled in your textbook. This first one right here is bringing blood to the right side of your body, but in particular the head and your right arm. All right, so can you remember what we call an arm? That's the brachium, right? And toward your head, another way of talking about a direction toward your head, we say cephalic. Cephalic means toward your head. So this artery is the brachiocephalic artery, taking blood to the right side of your brain, okay, and your right arm. Brachiocephalic. Oh, there's an O in there, so they're combining brachium and cephalic together. All right, now here I see three, which means there's some funny thing happening with symmetry, right? I don't see two and two, I don't see one and one, I see one and two. Well, these two right here do the job of the first one. So there sort of is some symmetry. So the next one over here is what we're going to call a carotid artery, and it's on the left side. This is the left carotid artery. Right, carotid means going to the head. And here is a subclavian artery. This is the left subclavian. And you could probably tell me something about the left subclavian if you thought about it hard enough. Where do you think it goes? What do you know about clavian or clavi something? Clavicle. Where's the clavicle? Your collarbone. Subclavian is a big blood vessel that goes right underneath the clavicle. Okay, subclavian. So you can see it's one of the most important arteries in our body. And it's easy to break a clavicle. I think I mentioned this when we were looking at bones. I mean, but from your everyday experience, people break clavicles all the time. And a broken bone is very sharp, can lacerate a lot of tissue, right? It can even puncture your heart. How come no one ever lacerates or rips open their subclavian artery? It's right there by the clavicle, and they break all the time. Yeah, it breaks in that proper way. Because of that curvature, it always breaks exteriorly. It never breaks inferiorly or interiorly. It always breaks exteriorly. So if you ever break your collarbone or clavicle, you always have that bump right there, unless you pay somebody to go shave it down later. So it's really just cosmetic surgery, I think, in most cases. Okay, so if this is a carotid and this is a subclavian on the left side, so left carotid, left subclavian, the brachiocephalic very early turns into the right carotid and the right subclavian, right, which then maintains this nice symmetry that we have. Okay, the other thing that's on this slide is something we call a fossa ovalis. And what the heck is a fossa, once again, in terms of anatomy? A fossa is a depression, it holds something. In this particular case, it doesn't necessarily hold something, but at one point in everybody's life, it was a foramen, What's the function of a foramen once again? Passageway. All right, so that foramen was between the two atria, the right and left atrium. And when we're born, that foramen closes over, and when it closes over, it's just not quite as thick as the rest of the atrial septum. So it forms a little depression right there that we call the fossa ovalis. So it's a little depression between the two atria, and a fetus actually has a foramen there. So blood can move directly from the right atrium into the left atrium. All right, and when it moves from right atrium to left atrium, this is what you have to think about a little bit. What circulation is that blood bypassing? You're going to like this when you figure this out. What circulation is blood bypassing? Yeah, it's bypassing the pulmonary circulation, right? Because if it's in the right atrium, normally it goes to the right ventricle and then to the lungs. But if it goes in a fetus from the right atrium to the left, it bypasses the lungs. So what can you tell me about fetal lungs? Are they useful? No, because you're not breathing air. Right, and a fetus gets oxygen via the placenta, right, through the mom. So lungs aren't really used. So it's pretty futile for a heart, a fetal heart, to pump a lot of blood through the lungs because there's no reason for blood to go there, right? And so you have the fossa ovalis, the depression, right, when you're an adult. And as a fetus, we call that the foramen ovale. And so you could probably take a guess of what kind of shape it is, kind of. Square, kind of oval, yeah, if you see it. Okay. All right, so I think that's everything on this particular slide. All right, you got these atrioventricular valves. And what are you going to say to remember which one is tricuspid and bicuspid? Try before you buy. All right, so we're going to finish up the heart on Monday.